Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, before hopping into our next interview, I want to talk to you about one of Jen and my favorite components of our health, our foot health. It's so, so, so important when it comes to our movement, but also just when it comes to how we sense our environment around us. And that's why we love Neboso and all of the incredible foot health tools that they bring us to continue to optimize our foot health, which really has a huge impact on our overall health. We did an incredible interview with the functional podiatrist, Dr. Emily, who founded Neboso and came up with all these incredible tools. And I really want to focus on their recovery socks and the stimulation it gives all of those sensory nerves in your feet. Our feet have so many sensory nerves, but we still just put them in thick socks or slippers or put them in these tight shoes that don't allow those nerves to feel the environment around them as much. So these sensory socks are incredible at helping stimulate, give those feet a little bit of a different stimulus so that they can grow and that they can start to sense the world around us a little bit better. Go check out, they have three different types of foot recovery socks. The general foot recovery socks that go to the ankle, studio socks, which are a little bit slimmer fit, and their high knee recovery socks, which Jen and I love using something like this when we go on a plane ride where we're not going to be walking a lot and might need a little compression for that leg. And even bigger bonus, Neboso gave us an incredible 15% off coupon code. So you can go down to the link in the show notes, make sure you use code OPTIMAL at checkout to get 15% off anything site-wide. One of our favorite things that they have is the Neboso toe splay to help with that toe spread after a long day at work or wherever you may have been doing throughout the day. So go check out that link in the show notes. Make sure you use code OPTIMAL at checkout and get your 15% off.
So up on the podcast, we actually have Dr. Kyra Bobinet, who is a medical doctor and has her master's in public health. She is the CEO and founder of something called Fresh Try, which we're going to be talking about just a little bit. She is the award-winning public health physician specializing in healthcare innovation, technology-enabled behavior change, behavior neuroscience, health disparities, and population health management. She got her MD from UCSF, her MPH from Harvard, and has an adjunct faculty for Stanford School of Medicine and Dr. BJ Fogg's Behavior Design Lab. So as a former medical director for health and wellness innovation of Aetna, she designed evidence-based clinical interventions and algorithms for 30 million members. She's the inventor of Aetna's mindfulness product and cited clinical study, which proved significant outcomes and claims cost reductions. Dr. Bobinet's best-selling book, Well-Designed Life, has been called a must-have tool for health innovators worldwide. And we're really going to talk about what true change and lasting change in your life, especially on a diet app, can really look like.
Dr. Bobinet, thanks so much for being with us today. Excited to talk to you because I know a lot of what you deal with is behavior change. And ultimately, I think that's one of the lost arts in the Western medical space and health and wellness in general. So excited to get a little bit of your knowledge out on the table here.
Yeah, this is my favorite topic in the whole wide world. So I'm super happy to be here.
Amazing. Well, as a medical doctor, how did you kind of shift into the space of, you know, starting to create new processes and algorithms and use technology to kind of help drive this kind of change with people?
Yeah, I mean, like many of you, as clinicians, we've all kind of seen this pattern over and over again that kind of is hiding in plain sight. And where it popped into real focus for me was I was running a clinical study with Duke University School of Medicine, and we were studying metabolic syndrome, you know, which is a really difficult thing to change. And the treatment arm in the intervention arm, I spoke with one of the patients that was enrolled in that arm, and I just had a midterm interview with her, how it was going. And she said, "Oh my gosh, you know, it's amazing. I'm learning how to eat and when to exercise and all these things," right? She's super excited. And I was like, cool. In my mind, I was like, all right, nice. Like this is working, you know, because I was always on the hunt for something that worked. And then she pauses and she says, but I don't know why I know what to do, but I just don't do it. And I like immediately all of the other patients I'd ever seen that, you know, kind of like, it's almost like they were abducted by aliens and like, why didn't I keep eating healthy last year? Or like I was doing so well. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, kind of like you blank and then you end up blackout and you come back and you're like, all right, now I'm unhealthy again. So yeah. I was super curious about that process. Like what's going on there, you know? And it's actually in the literature called the no-do gap. You know, so you know what to do and you just don't do it, right? So there's a gap there. And so I started to get super curious about that. And part of what led me to, you know, like you asked Jen, Dr. Jen, about innovating in that space was just to kind of come from first principles, like come from the ground up and say, okay, forget everything I know, forget my training, forget my, you know, what other people think. So what is it that causes long-term success?
Yeah.
And what is distinct about that? And it turns out that the distinction is this ability to keep going, which sounds so stupid easy, but that's really what the whole thing centers around is, can you keep trying and keep creating what works for you and keep iterating? And I'll get to that word in a second. But that's really what stood out in my research of people who got long-term results versus those that relapsed and went back and gained all the weight or got, you know, more unhealthy.
Interrupting really quickly, because as we're talking about making real lasting changes within your life, which I love, we have to talk about one thing that people often neglect the most, and that's getting water in throughout the day. I know that I was one of those people that I would push off water. I didn't have a bottle near me, or life gets so busy and stressful that water's literally the last thing that sometimes you think about. So how do we add more water in? We actually hydrate our body. And that's not just with drinking water, but actually adding electrolytes. So Dom and I have been adding Element in for like over 6 months now, and it's been the best thing in our life. I'm telling you, I've used it throughout pregnancy. I've used it before pregnancy. I am using it through labor and delivery, and I know that I'm going to be relying on it heavily as I'm hydrating, as I'm breastfeeding, because it's going to add in that sodium, potassium, magnesium that is needed to really fuel our brain function and help us to not feel that fogginess throughout the day, help us to actually feel energized without having to reach for that extra cup of coffee, because, you know, that's not actually hydrating. So really making that change within our life and getting more water in and flavors that actually taste so good. I'm telling you, you got to try all these different flavors. And what's great, when you purchase through our link that's in our show notes, it's drinkelement.com/optimal. You actually get a free sample pack as well with every single purchase. And this is where you're going to be able to sample a lot of those different flavors that I'm talking about. You'd be surprised. Some of those chili hot flavors that are also like mango chili. And oh my gosh, they have incredible stuff. So go check out drinkelement.com/optimal. Oh yeah.
And I think you point out just such an important point right here. I really like that no-do gap. Like, people know what to do, but then I think I would add to it that there's also a no-no-do issue. Like, I know what to do, but I don't know how to start doing those things or why I'm not choosing to do those things. And it immediately points out that health is just so multifactorial. And I think that we really try to compartmentalize all these different portions of people's health into the physical space and into medical, and then, oh, there's diet, but you see a different person for each of these, and a lot of doctors don't consult on mindset or on diet because that's just not their space, and we really need to start, you know, learning how to teach people how to do these things, but, you know, on top of that, how to motivate them to start taking that action. And I think motivation is a really difficult thing because motivation can be fleeting, or what motivates you one day might not, you know, last or might not have that longevity to, like you said, have you keep making that choice over and over again, year over year. So how do you start to approach people and their motivation?
Yeah, motivation, you know, in the literature, I always thought for the longest time was kind of a garbage term.
Yeah.
Until I found some neuroscience that made me feel a little better about that, which is I found that there was an area of the brain called the habenula, And the habenula is a half a centimeter big in your thalamus, which is like kind of an obscure area of the brain that not a lot of people researched before this. And what started to come to light is that it has two superpowers. Number one, it basically detects failure, whether that failure is I know that I failed at something, or I subconsciously just feel like a failure because I, you know, didn't walk the mile I said I would walk to myself this morning. You know, I only walked half a mile or something like that. So that's a failure signal. And then the habenula wakes up whenever there's failure. It's like, oh yeah, you know, it kind of monitors it and it kind of alarms. And then if it goes off, if it alarms, the second superpower that it has is it kills your motivation to keep trying that thing. Mm. And I like to call it the don't touch the hot stove twice button in your brain, because it does actually save us from making stupid choices over and over again, right? That don't serve us. But when it comes to behavior change, I've realized that this is the biggest obstacle, and we've completely missed it. Everybody's been designing, all of my colleagues and I for decades have been designing for either the amygdala, which is like the metaphor for the emotion centers, or the prefrontal cortex, which is the metaphor for, you know, executive control, like, you know, choosing, you know, decision making, or dopamine, which is like kind of a reward center, you know. So everybody's been super hot on all these other topics, but, you know, sneakily hiding in plain sight is this habenula effect, you know. And it turns out that, as far as I can tell with all the recent research, that is the most significant lever of behavior change that we haven't designed for.
Wow. And so how do we really start to talk to that center of the brain?
Yeah, so it's more about avoiding it. The metaphor I find helpful these days is thinking about it as like two pedals in your car. You've got a gas pedal, which is like dopamine. It's your motivation, you know? And so you can floor your gas pedal and take off. But if you have the habenula engaged, it's like a parking brake. Mm-hmm. Or the brake pedal. If you got your foot on the brake pedal and your foot on the gas pedal in your car, you're not going anywhere if your brakes are good. And so the habenula is the brake pedal. So we have to design ways to disengage that brake. And otherwise, and another sort of fun fact is that substances of abuse, alcohol, you know, opiates, those kinds of things bind to the habenula and take off the brake, but they take it off towards bad behavior or undesirable behavior, things you want to stop doing. And these addiction, even nicotine, these addictive substances basically disengage your brake, and you can't control your behavior, and your motivation, your rewards, and your dopamine just kind of goes uncontrolled, right? So to solve that when we want to release the brake ourselves, then we want to do things like manage our sense of failure. You know, that's the number one thing, like reframing failure, saying I didn't fail, or it's a new day. Those kinds of things are intuitively done by those who get lasting results and are not done by people who, you know, get stuck and quit trying. I call it the quit trying it epidemic, not to blame ourselves, but just to say there's a switch that goes off in our brain. There's a trigger, a kill switch for our motivation called the habenula, and we want to avoid that at all costs. Mm.
So with the platform that you founded, Fresh Try, which, you know, really focuses on starting to teach people how to change that relationship with food and eating and getting on a path that might better support their health overall. I know you work a ton with mindset, and could you talk a little bit about the benefits of using an iterative mindset approach, which I know you talk more into, compared with a more traditional performative mindset approach?
Right, exactly. I think you need both, you know. I think we're just in a point in time in the industry where we've over-indexed on performance-based tools, you know, goals and tracking, counting calories and weighing your food and all that kind of stuff. And actually, a recent study has shown that mindset is faster. Mindset is faster towards behavior change. And I find also that our research shows that it is more stable. It's a more stable form of changing your behavior. So the early research that we did was on people who are frontline workers, and we found that those who, you know, got the weight off and kept it off permanently or long term actually had a different mindset than those who reverted and regained the weight and that kind of thing. And this is further supported by the National Weight Loss Registry data that shows that people who keep off weight long term are people who have the shortest relapse periods. In other words, they're wallowing less in the thought of I failed, and they're getting back on the horse quicker than other people. Mm. And that is what helps them to avoid wallowing in the habenula and disengaging that brake pedal and starting to keep going. And it propagates their efforts quite naturally instead of having to do it through performance. And performance is, you know, SMART goals. It's setting a finish line, which is great in the short term. But what was missing and what we found in our research is that you have to, that's one iteration, whatever you did, the fast or the cleanse or the intermittent fasting. Now you have to iterate further, meaning to tweak, tinker, add something, shrink something, make it smaller, make it different, you know, add a person, add a support person. Those are all iterations that we found that people naturally did to keep themselves going and to keep it fitting their lifestyle because their life changed. You know, they got injured, they aged, their family circumstance changed, they moved, they got promoted at work, whatever the case, or they got bored with what they were trying to do. All those things are called iterations. And I would, if I had one wish, I wish everybody would understand that you don't need to fail, you just iterate because iterators never fail.
So how does the app kind of help people to make those shifts, make those changes based on where they are in their life?
Yeah. So we're the first software that has been designed around iterative mindset and around iteration that I can tell, you know, especially in behavior change world, everything else is performative. You're measuring things, you're setting goals, you're, and let me just say a side note on the goal thing, goals are toxic if you think that that's the end all be all. Like if I don't make my weight goal by June, whatever, I'm going to have a failure event. Yeah. And so that's kind of the risk that you take when you set a normal performance-based goal. So the app and the software basically guides you towards, you know, it's just iterate. Whenever you hit a bump, whenever you hit a snag, just iterate your way out of it because it's just information. It's not an indictment on whether you're a good person or a bad person or a successful person or a failure. It has to do with maybe not now. Maybe not the right way, you know, maybe not that. Like you found out that you were miserable trying to eat cooked vegetables and instead fresh vegetables is your thing. Great. You know, that is an iteration and that's your iterative mindset. You're going to practice something as if it's like a new skill. You know, we would never pick up a musical instrument we didn't know how to use and expect and hold ourselves accountable for being really good at it from day one. But if you start a diet, you hold yourself accountable to being good at it from day one. You know, it's a very different mentality. And so having that iterative mindset imbued throughout the entire experience, a container, there's a fresh tribe, you know, of like a bunch of people like you who are thinking like this, who are iterating their way through their own behavior and keeping it going over time. That seems to be really resonating with people. And people love the idea that they can never fail and they just have to iterate, do their next iteration. And the app gives you all of the things at your fingertips around and related to what you're trying. So let's say you're trying to reduce carbs and you're trying to do that by, you know, switching out whole grains for, you know, kind of the sugary stuff and the white bread and that kind of stuff. It gives you so many different ideas and hacks that have worked for other people that are evidence-based by science, different ways to approach that, education moments, you go to trainings, all that kind of stuff, just whatever is going to help you to do that, and we call it a try, you know, the habit that you're practicing, anything that you need is at your fingertips to be able to keep doing that and iterating your way through that.
And I think that I like this, you know, iterative mindset concept that you're talking about, and it kind of reminds me or makes me think of, you know, resilience or grit. And I don't know how synonymous you would see those, but it's like, okay, if you try one thing and it doesn't work, for a lot of people, that's where they, you know, maybe their habenula is starting to kick in where they're just like, oh, I tried, it failed, I'm just not going to try again. You know, what's the point? I tried eating those vegetables and it didn't work for me. I didn't like them. I hated them. I didn't notice any difference. And I feel like health and wellness is just a resilience game in itself where you might need to try 10 things before you find the one that hits. And so do you think resilience and or grit are kind of, you know, similar or parallel to this iterative mindset?
Yeah, let me just go back to like, because I really was really noticing the language that you were using about, you know, what's the point? Like, the nothing ever works for me. Like, those are all, that's your habenula talking, by the way, just so people can recognize it. And you as a clinician, like you recognize it when you see it, once you are told about it. You know, so many clinicians come to me and they're like, oh my gosh, this is exactly why people succeed when they succeed. And I just didn't know what to call it, you know? And so resilience, grit, self-efficacy, confidence, I would say those are all outcomes of having an iterative mindset, mm-hmm. of being able to neutralize your habenula, but they don't on their own, they're not instructive enough to tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
So I would say the iterative mindset is the kind of how-to the outcome of self-efficacy, confidence, having grit, having resilience, because it's an after effect of having iterated your way through something or figured something out. You're like, oh, it wasn't all lost for me. Like I'm a learning being. I can figure this out, you know? And then you start to be more resilient to discouragement. You start to have more grit and double down because, you know, it worked out for you before, you know?
Yeah.
And so you keep leaning on that methodology.
And how does this kind of mindset start to play a role in someone who already feels like, well, I already suffer from diabetes or I'm already obese? Like, how do we start to get someone back on track of this mindset of continuing and trying different methods and continuing on when they already feel like I'm coming in already failed?
Exactly. And what you're talking about is like what I metaphorically call like a scarred down habenula. Like you've got a lot of scarves there, you mm-hmm. know, because of your life experience, and nothing's going to deliver that more than, you know, past failures and banking those. And so as we get older, you know, part of why people have so much trouble changing their behavior as they get older is that they have a lifetime of banking all of these scars in their habenula and proof against themselves, indictment against themselves that they can even succeed, you know, because been there, done that. I tried to set it, you know, I think there's like cute little memes, but they're also kind of like scary because they say things like, you know, I've lost and found the same 10 pounds, you know, multiple times. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever heard that one, but, yeah. or I fell off the wagon and I burned it and threw it in a ditch or something. It's just like these, yeah. these kinds of, we laugh at ourselves, but we're really struggling to be able to overcome these past failures. So some powerful ways to do that is to reframe, you know, it wasn't the right time, or I learned something from it and now I know to do better, or, you know, that wasn't for me, you know, the me, not me kind of filter, like that wasn't me, you know, I'm not a person who enjoys, you know, being in the cold and running in the cold. So I'll run indoors on the treadmill. There's an iteration right there. So I'm just finding what works for me. And I'm also not going back thinking that the same thing that worked for me as an 18-year-old kid is going to work for me as a 48-year-old person. You know, like those kinds of updates and iterations of who you are also need to be pulled along.
Mm. Yeah, I think that just continuation of understanding too that what worked for me previously might not work for me now. And I mean, we were kind of clicking through the socials and on Instagram watching some of like the tutorials that are on there as to how the platform works, and I think it's really cool. Like you said, it has you answer a few questions and get you to a place where it says, okay, there's 11 things that you could start trying, and it gives you all of these different iterations right there that you can start diving mm-hmm. into right away. And I think one of the ones we saw specifically was about something like sugar, and mm-hmm. you know, I think this is a natural thing because of popularized media, social media, all the clickbaity stuff you see out there, that there are things that are bad and there are things that need mm-hmm. to be cut out. And you know, on the flip side, there's a lot of people that talk about how, okay, there shouldn't be good and bad foods. Like, we shouldn't create that dichotomy in our head. What do you feel about that conversation about like, okay, sugar is bad and we need to avoid sugar at all costs versus right. approaching it a different way?
Yeah, I agree with, I'm in the camp of there's no good or bad. However, there is, you know, what can I get myself to do and what can't I get myself to do?
Yeah.
So there, you know, I come from a background where I grew up in Oklahoma, and when I graduated high school, I was eating 3 squares of meals a day through a drive-thru. Mm-hmm. And so coming from there to like now being like vegan, pescatarian, you know, a lot of my food, annual food, or, you know, food budget goes, or budget each month goes to food, you know, really just caring about food a lot more and what I put in my body, that kind of thing. But that's a very long iterative process to get there, you know? And yeah. So I would say that when people are told that there's bad foods, that sets up a habanula event right there, yeah. You know, because then you can fail. Anytime I'm taking a position where you are a failure or a success, you know, it's going to risk you scarring yourself down with habanula. And the, my number one goal with people is just keep them in effort, you know, keep them living, creating life ways for themselves. Like, can I live like this? Can I live with this? Is this me? Like those kinds of, can I get myself to do this? Okay, I can no longer get myself to do that. One of the things I've noticed is that if something worked for you in the past, there's a reason why you broke up with it. It's kind of like going back to an old boyfriend or girlfriend. It's like, there's a reason, like when you hang out with them again, you're like, oh yeah, that's why I didn't end up with you long-term, you know? And so similarly with that last workout or that gym or that thing, you know, some part of you subconsciously is moving on, you know, wants to find your next thing, you know? So lingering on those things that I'm good if I go back to that gym and I'm bad if I don't like go to the gym anymore, you know? It really just is a force that we don't recognize that's pushing us to our next iteration. And if people are aware of that, then they're going to be a lot more elegantly leaning into discovering what's next for them, you know? And that's what software does too. It's like it serves up all these things that's like, what's next for you algorithmically? And it's specific to each person. And so I do think that with the good and bad food thing, it's just what can you get yourself to eat and what can you get yourself to not eat right now? And that moves over time.
And so things aren't necessarily, because we're still looking at it as, you know, someone wants to lose weight, you know. So how are we approaching food then? If I've continuously been going for fast food, or I continuously go for the processed food aisle, or I need my candy every single day, like how do we start to make those shifts and changes within the mind that say, you know, this isn't bad, but I'm not going to put it into my life. Like how do we start to categorize that on even an app or someone trying to lose weight and not having these distinct good, bad categories?
Yeah. I think that having watched hundreds of thousands of people do this so far, what I'll say is the most successful pattern is to have the intention to eat healthier and to hold that intention around a specific practice that you're practicing, like that your brain can really latch onto, like I'm going to replace white bread for whole grain bread or something like that, whatever I think is going to work for me. And what I find really remarkable is that people who do that, they tend to have these kind of bleed over effects of, so even though I'm working on white bread swapping for whole grain bread, I'll then also start to cut down my soda, because I'm overall in the mindset of eating healthy. You know, I've primed myself to eat healthy during the day, and I'll kind of slip in little bonuses here and there that kind of help me along the way. And when people are quote unquote dieting or trying to lose weight, it's this kind of core practice that they need to hold on to, that they need to turn into a mindless habit, because that is going to be the most sticky thing for them long term. But also all these one-off attempts, all these one-off like little good person actions that I do that make me feel good about myself and that will help also with the weight loss kind of thing. And so the most important thing I find with weight loss is it a lifelong relationship with this thing that you can imagine, or a long-term relationship with this thing, or is this just until June? You know, and just changing the way that people approach how they're picking what they're trying, like, is this something you could live with long-term? Or is this just a one night stand or a short term thing to functionally get to that wedding, you know? And so yeah. I find that with hundreds of thousands of people who think about, I'm dating this habit practice with the idea of marrying it. You know, I'm going to adopt this as long as I can, you know, as a life way. That tends to work more for people than this kind of short term thinking.
Totally. And I think that one thing that I want to touch on too, and it is kind of going to reach back to the motivation argument. I mean, you mentioned, is this something I'm just going to do until I get to that wedding or can fit in that dress? And I think a lot of people will use those as the initial, like, why, you know, like the reason, the underlying motivation for why they want to make some dietary changes. But, you know, in a platform like fresh try or just in your process that you like to follow, like how do we get people to that deeper why? Like yeah, mm-hmm. you might want to get mm-hmm. to the wedding and be able to fit into the dress, but there's something deeper there that if you feel like getting into that dress or looking a certain way for the wedding is your optimal way of living, like there's something that you're living with right now that you're not completely fulfilled with. So is there a way that when people get onto this platform, you start trying to dig into that deeper why of why they want to start making changes in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have daily, pretty much daily live trainings, and we have got a library of over 600 trainings on iterative mindset where there's tons of ideas around any topic of lifestyle or living or, you know, like life events like that, you know, like what happens when you have a event for which you're trying to be healthy. And then really the problem there is that people stop iterating. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. they do what they can get themselves to do, sometimes forcibly, which I do not recommend because there's a real kickback. There's like a backfire of that particular way of doing things. If you're suffering and you're making yourself suffer in order to get into that dress, you better believe your brain's going to punish you after that because yeah. you made it do things that it didn't like to do and that it wasn't enjoying. So as much as you can focus on compromising on things that you at least find some enjoyment in order to get into that dress. And then after the dress, what's your next act? What's next? You know, that's what people fail to think of themselves. And then because you don't put anything in place of that getting into the dress, then you just go back to your old habits, which are all very, very strong, all still preserved in your brain. And you just start to run those programs. You know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, it takes a good long time to get a new habit to completely dominate an old habit, and that the old habit doesn't go away. It lies in wait. And when you're tired or when you're distracted or when you're stressed, it'll come back in a bad way. That's called a relapse. And then the best thing to do is just to ignore it, get back onto the new habit practice, you know, your new why, your new next, whatever that is, so that you can just ignore the emergence, the sort of temporary emergence of your old bad habit. But most people who get discouraged or feel like that's a failure, oh, my old habit came back, like I'm a failure. No, you're not. You're just a human, mm-hmm. you know? And it's in your brain. It'll always be in your brain. That's not even interesting. What's interesting is what's your next, you know, thing that you want to fit into, the dress, the whatever, you know, like, and moving that bar forward so that you're constantly iterating.
What's a realistic timeline that people can go into this app and start thinking, okay, is it by this time? Is it I'm making a lifestyle change, so this is going to be a lifetime access onto this app? Is this, like, how does someone start to wrap their mind around a timeline or an expectation of when they want a certain health behavior to start kicking in?
Right. That's a really great question. Because I think that's really the heart of it, right? You know, in terms of people sizing up whether it's too intimidating to even start to do something that they want to do. But I would say that, you know, any time you do something positive for yourself, you send a little surge, a little, almost like putting a coin in a piggy bank, or, you know, a little bit here and there, and you drip system this in over time, and your brain wakes up. And it basically says, oh, you know, I get it. You want to live like this at some point. So when you go into picking something, the most safe thing to pick is, you know, this is something that I can live with. This is something that I could see myself enjoying over time, or that I see myself kind of being able to get myself to do at the very least. And when you're shopping for things in your home, for example, there is a different filter that you use in your brain of, is this something that is going to be something I enjoy, that sparks joy in my life, you know, to quote Marie Kondo, or is this something that's kind of a throwaway? I'm on the road and I forgot something at home and I just need this temporary thing and that kind of thing. And I think the latter is the most dangerous. You know, that the former, when you're thinking of something that's like a permanent fixture or something that can change your life way, in a way that you feel good about building the life you love, that kind of filter is the most safe and the most rewarding for everybody. Mm.
So, I mean, I, of course, love all of this because, I mean, Jen and I, being in the physical therapy space, are in a very similar mindset of when people come to us with pain or when people come to us, you know, wanting a certain outcome, you know, we are talking the behavior change game with them. And actually, very early on when I was in school, I started realizing that, at least in my opinion, one of the banes of the medical system was this hyper-specialization and this obsession with specialization of every single medical professional. How in your first year of school, you're starting to be asked, like, oh, what are you going to specialize in? What are you going to specialize in? And really early on, I started realizing that the issue wasn't that I didn't know enough about the shoulder specifically, and I needed to become a specialized orthopedic shoulder specialist. I needed to learn how to motivate people to behavior change. And so, kind of tongue in cheek, whenever anybody asked what my specialty was going to be, I started saying, behavior change. I'm going to work on learning how to help people inspire themselves and empower themselves to make changes in their life. And, you know, you being somebody who went on to get your master's in public health and have made this your whole career in life, I think that's amazing, but it's a relatively niche space, you know? And there's not a ton of people in the traditional medical system doing this. So do you feel like this is always going to kind of be a niche space in health, or do you feel like there's a path to having this integrated more into, you know, general practitioners and clinicians education?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just say it really uplifts my spirits that there's somebody like you all who kind of became enlightened, you know, during your training or for however you woke up to that, because it is the heart of the matter. And especially in chronic pain, your area of expertise, there's never more pressure than to fix something quickly than that experience, right? So I can understand how you would get immediately awakened to, hey, wait a minute, like, I can't keep putting band-aids on this, you know? And there's a larger topic here that is looming, you know? And so let me go for that, you know? So, but as you point out, you all are the unicorns. You're not the horses, you know, you're zebras, not horses, as they say. And so how do we get the rest of the clinicians to come along? We had a really, we have a VP of behavior design, Casey Hughes, who she's a clinical health coach and has done really great work at like very large institutions, medical institutions, Stanford Medical in particular. And she did a webinar for other health coaches. And let me just tell you, they are hungry for a better solution because they've all noticed by now that SMART goals aren't working. They're forced to give their patients things and then they see that it fails them. And so that disillusionment, people are so hungry for the truth, for what's happening in the brain. And we, to this day, we have not been able to catch up with this demand, but we are fielding and we are figuring out a way to train everybody, you know, in the clinical world. And that's just kind of a passion project of mine, and, you know, invite collaboration on that from all of our, you know, people who have also arrived at the same spot, you know, because we all share that, you know, we all have kind of like seen that the system isn't giving the right advice and, or even training people at all, you know? And so I do think there's a role for, you know, giving people, clinicians, the right tools, and it doesn't have to change their, the amount of time that they spend with the patient or that kind of thing. But they will treat the patient differently and they will give them different instructions. I would, if I had a patient in my office, I would send them out of the door with, hey, you know, if this doesn't work, it's not you. It's not your fault. Don't think you failed. Just iterate and come back and we'll iterate together, you know? And that's a very different instruction than what people receive now, which is like, do this by this date and I'll see you back in 3 months. And then they don't come back because they're ashamed to see you.
Right. Yeah. So true. So how does someone on their own, without having, you know, a professional in front of them, continue to iterate on their own and come back to the app? Like, what makes someone continue to open this app? What makes someone continue to come back?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the brain is really keen on figuring out kind of what the what, you know, like what is the origin story of this, or what is the thing I'm doing here? And so it's telling itself a story right now, because performative tools and performance mindset is so ubiquitously used in health and wellness. Right now, people are like, their mental model is, I'm going to go and I'm going to diet and it's going to end on this date. You know, if they have a different set of expectations and you engineer that for them and with them, you know, again, the research is showing that mindset is the fastest way to change behavior. If their mindset is shifted as to what to expect and what it is that they're doing. So I'm not setting a goal. I'm practicing this thing. I'm not failing. I'm iterating whenever I have a thing where I might feel like I failed. You know, like all of those little ways of changing people's expectations will keep them in effort. And that's the way that we protect them. And that's the way that they can carry it in between, you know, looking at a tool like Fresh Try and coming back and be like, okay, something didn't work. I'm coming back in. We have a daily check-in system where we kind of check for iteration and for maybe risk of thinking that you failed. And we reframe for you. And we also find the sort of protective factors, the positive psychology protective factors that are authentic, that feel real for you. And then we also are building a backup system where on the spot, you can kind of get a back me up kind of coaching moment. You don't have a coach assigned to you, but like you have people that you that know what they're doing that are trained in this that you can consult with. So we're giving them every opportunity to go out and try things and practice it and then come back when they get stuck or when they want to celebrate or when they just want to connect with other people who are like them.
That sounds fantastic. Dr. Bobinet, thanks so much for explaining all this. I mean, Jen and I could probably sit here with you for hours and nerd out on everything behavior change, but we would bore people to death, I'm sure, by the end of the couple hour conversation. Again, thanks for being here, spilling all of this wisdom and knowledge about behavior change that you have and for everything that you're doing with Fresh Try. We will have that linked up down in the show notes so that people can go click in and check it out and see if they can start to find iterations for themselves. I know they will be able to find them and start to have and develop that iterative process in their own mind. I know you've also authored a best-selling book, I believe, The Well-Designed Life. Is there anywhere else that people should go to check out Fresh Try or to continue to be able to learn from you?
Yeah, I mean, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Facebook, follow us on social, and you know, certainly sign up for our newsletters and be able to download the app and be a part of that. So all of that is available, and we're going to be adding stuff, more and more stuff, as we turn the corner to 2023 as well. So keep stay tuned because it just gets better and better.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for all of this information and your education and the work that you're continuing to do, changing things up and continuing to listen to people and make it better. I think that's everything. So thank you for your work.
Yeah, thank you too.
Thanks for sticking around for that interview on how to start to become an iterative person and develop that resilience and grit that it really takes to find your optimal body and continue on your health and wellness journey every single day. Please remember to pass this episode along to anybody who you think might benefit from it. And please consider leaving a rating and a review on your favorite podcasting platform. And of course, we'll see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.